Get a job.
Work hard.
And one day you can retire and do the things you want.
That's the typical formula for daily life in the modern world.
And it works for lots of people. This kind of life is perfect.
But it's not for us. And I'm guessing that it's not for you either.
I'm David Allan Patali.
And I'm Carmen Allan Patali. And together we run the content company Red Platypus.
I'm also a published fiction author.
And we have two young daughters who keep us on our toes.
We've both said no to well-paid jobs in favour of pursuing our creative paths. And we want to walk them with you.
Freelancer, digital nomad, artist, creative, self-employed. Whatever you want to call it, if you work for yourself and want to keep it that way, or want to be free from the 9-to-5 and don't know where to start, we want to help.
We're going on a journey to speak to committed creatives, people who are all in, who have made highly successful businesses out of their creativity, and ask them how they do it while retaining the magic.
Because while we think inspiration is good, we've come to learn that process is vital.
Welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast, your toolkit for the creative life you want.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Committed Creative Podcast. I'm your host, David Allan Patali, and as you can probably hear in my voice, I'm not very well. In fact, I have COVID. Don't worry, I'm sure it can't be transferred through the speakers. But I do wish there was a magic trick where I could click my fingers and this feeling would go away instantly. But life doesn't work like that. But magic sometimes does. In fact, a magic trick that confounds, entertains, and amazes is just the kind of thing I could do with right now. And it's this desire to see something amazing that has driven my guest on the Committed Creative Podcast today to devote his life to the pursuit of magic. Daniel Chan was a pre-IPO employee at PayPal when one day he quit, cashed out what stock he had, and decided to pursue magic full-time. Since taking that incredibly brave leap, Daniel has become known as the billionaire's magician and Silicon Valley's favorite magician, wowing tens of thousands of people with his technology-driven tricks. His passion for magic is simply incredible, and his creative vision for what he can do with it will blow your mind. So, let's meet Daniel Chan, who spoke to me from his home in the United States.
So I'd just like to start with a very broad question. What do you love about magic?
The money. In all seriousness, I love figuring out how the magic works. And then I love how something so simple can fool you and how it can be layered in a different way to become something new.
Yeah. What do you find is the moment that you enjoy the most when you're doing a trick for an audience? Is it when you're pulling them into the trick or is it when you're revealing?
I don't reveal tricks, and the pulling is the hard part, and that's not enjoyable. The enjoyable part is seeing people react like crazy. If you go to my website, danchanmagic.com, you can see these people with over-the-top David Blaine freak-out reactions. And that is the best part of performing. It doesn't matter what trick I do. I really don't care what tricks I do. Sometimes a trick that is impressive to me doesn't create visceral reactions. The other thing is, if someone is thinking and their gear slip, but they talk about you 5 or 10 or 20 years later, that's the thing I really enjoy.
Yeah, that you've gotten into their minds. And could you give us, say, a brief summary of how you got into magic? Because what I'd like to talk to you about is practically doing it and why you've chosen this career path. But how did you get into it?
There are multiple things that kind of converge. Just like Steve Jobs says, you can't line everything up, but in hindsight, you can line up all the dots or join up all the dots. Things like meeting David Copperfield and watching him and watching shows throughout the years pretty much kind of make you gravitate toward that. So it's not one specific thing.
Were you interested in magic as a kid?
Just as much as you were, but once I got into the magic store and realized that the secrets can be bought, sold, and traded, and if you would watch a show again and again, you could figure out how it works. So I tell someone, I'm not going to teach you my best tricks, but if you come to a show 6, 7, 8 times, you might figure it out. There's a better chance if you come to a show a couple more times, you would figure it out.
And what I've really liked in reading about you is that you have approached this right from the get-go as a business. Yes, as a creative expression of what you want to do and all the artistry that is involved in it and the sacrifices that you have to do to make it. But at the same time, you've been figuring out, how do I actually do this as a business? Was that a conscious decision from the beginning, or is it something that you had to come into?
I studied with many of the best magicians and many of the best business minds in magic and outside of magic. And show business is two words. And the business word has twice as many letters. So I think you should focus on the business just as much as you focus on your show. And what the audience wants. Sometimes the best tricks that you like aren't the same effects that the audience likes. And that's very important to distinguish. Who are you performing for? Are you doing it for yourself or for the audience?
Can you take us to when you were working at PayPal? That's sort of in the before times, before you embraced the journey of magic. Was it ever on your radar as a career option, or was it something you just liked to do?
I was already doing magic as a side hustle at PayPal days. I worked at PayPal before Elon Musk. In fact, I worked there for 13 months, and I vested my stock options, and I decided that, you know, magic to me is my passion, and I would rather pursue my passion than to get stuck in a cubicle.
Did you ever regret the decision?
I always question it because, according to my calculations, if I worked at PayPal longer and I vested all my stock options, I would have been worth at least $5 million.
But would you have been happy?
I don't know. thinking about that amount makes me think that I would be happier in some small aspect. But if you really think about it, the grass is greener than on the other side. When I show people the sacrifices that I had to make, when I coach a lot of people and I tell them you have to do this, this, and this, often people are unwilling to either pay the price or spend the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty true. Like, I do a lot of writing, and I find that when I teach people writing, it blows their minds how many drafts you have to do of a story, how many research projects you have to do to actually make it into something that's going to be remotely a finished product. So there's that difference between wanting to do it and actually doing it, isn't there?
Yeah. I would say I'm one of the best corporate magicians in the world, but what made me great was all the time I spent at restaurants doing close-up magic for tips. And also street performing on the streets of San Francisco and Palo Alto. But if I told some people, hey, let's do this, half the people would say no. Because they wouldn't understand that that's what made me great. Being able to hold a crowd that has no obligation to watch you. It's easy to entertain someone when they're sitting down in a theater, when they've already committed $20 or $30 or $100, that's an easy thing. But if you have to stop someone and keep them engaged, that's hard. And then being able to transition your business to paid audiences and corporate audiences.
Do you try to bring that mentality now into how you approach things now that you're more established and more successful? You still have that grind?
There's some things that are a detriment when you're working on the streets. Like sometimes I speak a little bit too fast just because I want to make sure that they catch it before they leave, because I realize that time is a commodity. So there are certain weaknesses that I realize carried on from my street days. So you have to change the modality and you have to change your mindset to realize you don't have to rush through an effect or you don't have to get to the end. When you're on the streets, you want to have everything modular. So if someone were to watch your magic effect, they could watch part of it and leave and still come away with something. if you're doing theatrical magic, you might not be able to work with someone or show the full story. And that's just the nature of the beast.
Who's helped you along the way? Has it been other magicians, or has it been, you've had a lot of interaction with, you know, Silicon Valley CEOs, so you've learned things from different people? Who have been the standouts for you?
I learned Silicon Valley culture and scaling. And for example, right now, I am performing via Zoom.
Wow.
And
yes,
if you think about it, this is an amazing thing, because I've woken up at 5 a.m. for shows for MasterCard and in Dubai and South Africa and other places. And that mentality or that thinking helped me realize that this is really a trend that's going to take off. Just like you saw PayPal take off and Google and Airbnb. And these are all companies that I've worked for. Companies from A to Z, from Airbnb to Zoomingle. I strategically targeted all these corporations you see on my website, and I found them as clients because I had a strategy and an end goal in mind.
One of the quotes I try to live by is Sun Tzu, you know, opportunities multiply as they're grasped. Do you think there's something in that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you tell me through why? What, like, can you give an example of how you grasped, that's a tough word, one thing, and then it led to something else?
I started with clowning and balloon sculpting, and then quickly to transition to magic, and then fire juggling and pickpocketing and smartphone magic effects. So these things all can teach you something. But often, people have only one sword that is sharpened. But you can learn something from all these other allied arts. Then when you realize what you have, you need to focus. So now I'm trying to eliminate more and more of the magic to do more and more mind reading and mentalism, which is an even more rare form of magic. You know, magic is like, for every magician, 10 magicians, there might be one mentalist. So I kind of find that the riches are in the niches.
The riches are in the niches. I like that. And do you enjoy that, the interaction you have with your audience, that some people want to be fooled, some people want to be entertained, others are trying to figure you out and try and stay a step ahead? Is that a bit of a game for you when you're in the moment?
That's funny that you say that, because I think magicians lie to themselves and say to them, relax, don't try to figure it out. If you're working for intelligent audiences, in the back of their mind, they're trying to figure it out. And for you to tell them not to is to insult their intelligence. It's kind of like saying, I am privileged to learn how this magic works, but you're not, or don't try to learn this. It's like, you yourself tried to learn it and you're trying to deprive them of that opportunity. Although I'm not going to spill my secrets, nor will I insult them by lying to them. I see so many magicians, and this is cringeworthy, and I even have friends that do it, but I'm looking at something on a TikTok video, and this guy says that this is something that he's doing, but it's a fake science video. And it's like, showing you how to do something, but it's debunked. But it's a magic trick. I'm like, dude, you just pretty much sacrificed your integrity to make or try to make a viral video, which it wasn't even a great video. So I'm thinking, that to me was cringeworthy.
Yeah.
It's insulting if you tell someone, hey, if you do this science thing, something can occur, you know, and that's how kind of like fake news gets out there.
That's true.
To me, so.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you're sacrificing your integrity for an easy win.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people have done that, but the more and more I see it, the more I realize, hey, is this what I want to do? Is this where I want to go?
How do you explain to people, say you're at a dinner party, people ask what you do, you know, and people say, oh, I'm a banker, I'm a lawyer, and you go, I'm a corporate magician. Like, what sort of reaction does that bring you?
My wife said, really? What do you really do? And then I said, I'm a magician. And she says, no, really? What do you really do? And I pulled out my bag of tricks and I showed her a trick I had, said, please sign your name and phone number across the face of the card. And right. I did some amazing things with that card. It ended up folded and forced in my wallet in a zippered compartment.
Sure.
She could not follow the card. It jumped all around and I ended up marrying her.
Fantastic. Pays to be a magician then. That's good. Yeah. And maybe just to circle back around to, you could have stayed at PayPal. You could have done the corporate track. Do you think you would have been happy, or do you think there would have been a nagging voice inside of your head saying, you've got to do something creative, you've got to do something with this talent you have?
Everything has a beginning and everything has an end. I think I learned enough at PayPal where if I was still there, I would be wasting my time. For someone who's an adventurer like myself with a startup mentality, you just ignore everything else because you realize that you have a higher purpose and you need to get to your purpose quicker. Whether it's grinding through those birthday party shows and building up a brand name, which is the difficult thing to do, to practicing. Those are things that are must. And if you're working for someone else often, you can be distracted if you know what you already want.
That's a good point. I didn't understand this until I had kids, and that though they're growing up, they haven't changed. The fundamental part of them that is, I suppose, for lack of a better word, the soul of these kids is the same. And if it's in you, it's in you. You can't resist this programming almost. You know, I used to think it was more nurture rather than nature, but it's definitely in your nature to want to do this kind of thing. I'd imagine 200 years ago, you'd have been someone jumping on a boat to go to the New World. You know, like, you'd have that adventurous spirit, you know, like.
I don't know about that, but I do have some quotes from people who said, always work harder, and then work smarter, not harder. And then I've kind of assimilated these quotes into just different ways to view the world at different points in time. So I'm not a risk taker, but if I can map things out, I realize that once I'm there, there's not going to be any competition there. So I realize that go where everyone else isn't going. Like when the Zoom thing came out, I was one of the first magicians to really embrace it. I saw so many top magicians who said they hated it. And they were really guys I looked up to, and I'm like, great, you hate it. That means that you're not going to want to jump onto Zoom. They hated Zoom magic shows.
Yeah.
Because they honestly, most of the guys really sucked doing it. And I was a thought leader and people are looking at what I was doing. And that's why still people come see my shows, lay people, magicians. They come see my show because they're like, what do you love about this magic show? And also they're asking, why is this guy killing in the magic show where he's doing 52 shows in a week, 12 shows in a day, 8 shows back to back in the half hour? When I tell people that, they're like, a little bit curious to be like, hey, let me buy a ticket to see what's going on there. And the thing is, success leaves clues. Don't just study one successful person in an industry. Go study a magician and steal some of his secrets and bring it to your industry. I study things from Elon Musk. I study things from Jeff Bezos. I'm very aware of all these founders and their bios, and also key points and things that have happened in their lives and what they continue to say. Because our thoughts determine our actions determine our habits, and our habits determine our destiny. So it's what you put in your head. And the only thing that you put in your head are the words you read and the things you watch and listen to. And the things that you read, it's great, but especially what you look at YouTube or whatever you're watching, because that actually comes out with emotion. If words were worth, if pictures were worth 1,000 words, how much more powerful is video?
Yeah. And you've distinguished yourself in the magic field by being someone who's embraced technology, when no one else was really doing that. And that was, I read that was your entree into the Silicon Valley world. Was that, did that come naturally? Like, was that a, like an idea you had, or was that, you know, observing a trend or just a willingness to try something?
I saw guys like Marco Tempest and Simon Pierro, and even younger guys like Trig Watson do magic that embraced technology. But being in Silicon Valley, I was known for that because in 2016, BuzzFeed wrote an article on me called Silicon Valley's Favorite Magician. Accompanying that video, there was this, there was a video. And that video showed me hacking into people's iPhones, doing tricks on their Instagram pages, doing things with maps, and so many other things. But I wasn't the first one, but I came up with a very cohesive character and a storyline that would weave everything together in a work of art that no one else has put together. And I stand on the shoulders of the giants who came before me. I don't have credit on a lot of things, but I do have a very unique perspective on seeing something and making it one step better. I don't want to just imitate someone. I want to show them something and show them that I made it even better than what they originally came up with. I want to impress the guys who invented the effect, because if I'm just imitating, that's kind of like, oh, so what? You can copy. I mean, the Asian people can copy like crazy, supposedly in Asia, but to take something to the next level and bring that full circle and make your contribution and your mark in that industry.
And what you were saying before as well about learning from other people, is that why, that's why you do what you do with food, going into restaurants and learning the craft behind the scenes?
Yeah, I am.
I'm fascinated by that, actually. I love to cook, so I'm really blown away you're doing that.
Yeah. I've been in a lot of Michelin-rated restaurants, even in Germany and in the Bay Area. Honestly, I'm not that great a cook, but my wife is an amazing cook, and she also can create food illusions. I recently said to her, let's do this challenge. So if you go on my TikTok, Millionaire's Mentalist, you can see in the middle something that looks like an egg, but it's not actually an egg. It's coconut pudding with mango purified in a sphere. And 9 people actually clicked like on that, saying, oh, and actually my original video got 1.9 million views on TikTok.
Wow.
Then I posted the food illusion, which got a lot of views as well. And then 9 people said, hey, that looks like a real egg. I think that's a real egg. I'm like, that's the best compliment because it's actually supposed to look like an egg, and it's actually a dessert. And hopefully that 9 will turn into 900 after some of our listeners here today go on my TikTok
to check out
the viral videos that I've gotten there.
Absolutely.
It's kind of funny. I taught my son, who's now 14 years old. At age 5, he was juggling 3 balls. At age 8, he was juggling 5 balls. By age 10, he was juggling 3 flaming torches. And by 12, he was on national television twice with an upcoming appearance on Netflix with Kevin Hart, Regina Hall, and Mark Wahlberg.
That's awesome.
In this movie called Me Time. But I thought those videos of him juggling flaming torches at 10 years old would have gotten us viral. But it's the video of me cracking an egg that went viral.
It's funny how it goes, isn't it?
It's sometimes interesting to see what you do and just kind of relax into it and just let it be.
When you're relaxed, are you relaxed on stage? Are you in your zone, or is it an intense experience for you?
I am not 100% comfortable on stage, just to be honest with you. I think that I'm getting there. Even after 5,000 plus shows over the last 20 years, I love close-up magic. I still do some stage magic. Just a couple days ago, I performed for 320 people in a church auditorium. It was huge. But I'm getting better at it, and people can't tell that I'm uncomfortable, because there's so much more in front of lots of people. You can't improvise and you can't go off script. To me, you can't, because they want a crafted, honed experience. But you're losing a lot of improvisational moments, even though they feel like, oh, wow, he's so witty. I felt like, hey, that's an act, because I've done that millions of times. And those laughs that you think that are so witty are so planned because the next time you see it, you're going to see it. But when I am just doing one-on-one close-up magic, I will take a lot of risk. I will go places where the script, you know, like, it's okay to crash and burn. And sometimes you'll hit something way out of the ballpark and you'll surprise yourself. And those are my best moments of magic because it's boring doing the same thing again and again to me. It's not like rocket science or brain surgery. When you're doing something like that, you have to be really scripted and you have to stay within the boundaries. But with magic and comedy, it's great to take risk, and that's what makes you inventive. And I think people are playing it way too safe by doing the same things or not taking the extra time to really think about artistic sensibilities. I still see a very large percentage of magicians doing stock lines and cheesy bits. Like, can you put out your hand? Oh, I meant the clean hand. Oh, that was the clean hand. And you can, you know, sometimes I'll fall on that if I'm working for drunks or if I'm like, just want to go in auto mode. But there's so many more things to do. Even just savoring the beats of silence is more intriguing to me than to recycle that line, because every magician's doing it. We feel like, oh, that's the easy way out. You're going to say this and it's going to get a laugh and everyone's going to laugh. Mm. Now, I have these great ideas in my show that I'm really trying to flesh out, and it leads to greatness. Like, for example, one idea I had this morning was, I want to do an illusion based on something called PK touches. But instead of any of these things, I would cut an apple, show the apple in front of this audience, and then put the piece in their mouth, and they would taste an orange.
Wow.
So yeah, imagine that as a whole new premise of influence, or saying, hey, you see something, but you're really not seeing that. Because that's what the premise of magic is. But no one's ever gone out to a food illusion or a tasting thing like that. Imagine if we did that. Magic shows wouldn't be the same, and people would be like, oh, I'm going to see a magic show. And they're pleasantly surprised to see something absolutely different. Mm. And that's what my next goal is, to find investors, do a very intimate show where people are paying between $100 to $250 to even $1,000 for like a full magic and dinner show hosted in my house or nearby. And it's close set magic. I saw a very famous magician who won a very major contest do close set magic in Las Vegas projected on two screens. And I'm like,
yeah, projected.
I'm like thinking, I saw you on a TV show do pretty much the same routines, and I'm paying close to $100 a head to watch you again do the same act with nothing different. Yeah. And using, it's not camera tricks, he's using some techniques that I'm like, that's not really that practical. Nor, so that's not to knock him, more power to you if you can do something unique like that. But I wanted to do something for the art where maybe the world's richest people would fly out to see me do this short run of shows every year. These don't actually make that much money, but I'll rent an Airbnb, a really nice Airbnb, and have like 15, 20 people watching some really intimate magic. And the difference between magic that happens now, like at a walk around if you're a cocktail party, is you don't have people watching you the entire time. They're going to drink and they're going to walk around and they're going to come back. So there aren't many close up formal shows with a clear beginning, middle, and end, and a specific time frame where everything is dedicated to watching the show. The reason why people don't do it is it's not really financially lucrative, because you can go, you know, sell something for David Copperfield, fill up 600 people paying the same amount. But there's an artistry to see something very close that's not projected on a screen. Mm-hmm. So if you follow me on social media, you'll see that I post these really fun shows that I'm really doing for the art. And I feel when you do something like that, you get recognition and people wonder what else is different. And to me, that is like the true artistry.
Absolutely. I'm loving this. All these different facets that you have all coming together in the one place. When you say you're not a risk taker, but these seem like calculated risks. You've thought this out very deeply. Every aspect that you're doing all comes together. Spokes of a wheel kind of thing.
Yeah, that and that's you? Why, because I've seen so many different things, I'm the only person who can actually execute on something like this. Because people haven't, you know, like most magicians haven't flown to Shanghai to watch this magic bar. You know, like when that opened, I was there, and it was only there for 2 or 3 years, and then it closed down. But I'm like, I've seen these people do it. And then I realized, hey, they did it this way, but I would do it.
Yeah.
In a different way, so it's more sustainable. And so it would actually stay sustainable. And that's why I haven't risked that part of opening up a physical venue. I've done it more as pop-ups because I realized, hey, if I'm going to sell tickets to an Airbnb or have a title sponsor, like sometimes I'll have a company sponsor me and hire me for the executives. And then on the same day, I might go to this venue, and then afterwards I'll tag along or piggyback a series of shows in the same venue because the HR person might see me. Or if I'm working at a resort, I'll do the resort and I'll walk by and do some magic for the manager of the hotel and say, hey, can you pass my business card off to the banquets or events manager? Or can I come in and do a free 15-minute show for you right now if you guys have time? And that's how you build those relationships, is that free gift.
I love it. Yeah, you're making your own luck and then backing it up with business processes and artistic vision.
Yeah. For any qualified clients who are here, if you just look me up on LinkedIn, Dan Chan or Daniel Chan, you can call for a 5-free-minute no-obligation demo to see what Zoom magic is like. When I first started doing magic over Zoom, people weren't sure if it would work out well. And they were like, hey, I'm not sure. But now on my website, I have so many videos on millionairesmentalist.com. You can see everyone freaking out, doing all this stuff. So you can see a lot of that. But there's something different than to watch a video and know that people are being engaged or getting a free sample and actually experiencing it like that. It's like watching someone eat on television versus actually experiencing it. And that's as close as you can come to experiencing it in the past. For example, I used to go to Google to do private demos. I would drive 40 minutes, sometimes show up to do 15 minutes to 45 minutes just to demo to get my foot in the door. Now I do all of that over Zoom. Awesome. I'm like, hey, you guys want to meet up and let me show you 15 minutes and I can like crank out 20 or 30 or 40 of these in a short amount of time.
Absolute game changer.
Power of scale. And that's Silicon Valley's model. And when I clicked on that, I said, I'm going to tell myself I love Zoom magic. No matter how difficult it was, I started saying, hey, I don't have to drive. I don't have to do this. And so I told myself, sometimes I'll drive 2 hours to event, perform an hour, arrive an hour early, and drive 2 hours back. That's like 6 hours already. For the same, like, let's just say that it's the same amount of money. I've now have a 5 or 6x investment on my time, which is our most valuable asset we ever have. And for coaches or anyone else, I tell people, do you want to learn magic and search around? If you like, that's a really fun journey. But if you are wanting to save your time and you want to learn from a master, you might be willing to pay 10 or 20x on buying a trick and playing with it, or spend $250 or $1,000 with a one-on-one hour consultation with a magician who will get rid of all the BS and tell you what the best things are. So I have a lot of CEOs who might take lessons with me. And they're just like, Dan, I just want to know this. And everything's for a price, but a lot of magicians are like, I'm not going to do this. I tell them, hey, it's a relationship when you're sharing a secret. Of course, I'm not going to share all my secrets, but sometimes you just want to get in the door. I had this very unconventional strategy. I would have CEOs, I would, you know, kind of hint to them that I can teach, and then they would have me back to teach. But I would actually end up at their homes, in their houses, which is a different dynamic than them being at their party. Because at their party, they have to shake hands, kiss babies, and do all this stuff where they're interacting with their clients or their either their clients or their employees. So that would be the wrong place to just talk or talk business or kind of like casually do something. But when you're the only person in front of them, you've almost become like a guest in their house. Mm. And that's when you get the next gig. When all things are equal, people like to buy from people that they know and trust.
Yes,
the relationship. And the more time you spend with someone, the more they trust you.
What does a CEO get out of learning magic? Is it to help them with confidence, or does it allow them to network better, or is it just something for that gets them out of their shell?
It's whatever they think it would get them. They're pretty smart. So some of them, they want to entertain their nephews and nieces. Some of them want to have a cool business trick. A lot of them, I recently realized, they want to be the life of the party like I am, and I teach them how to change a $1 bill into a $100 bill so they can pay for the bill and be the show-off.
I mean, that's a good trick.
That's fine. You know,
that's fine.
I used to do that trick all the time. I would have $1 bills, change them into hundreds, and then I would spend them. And I would do that all the time, and people would always remember me.
Let's go, what? Fantastic. Well, Dan, our podcast is about changing the idea that you have to be a starving artist, that creativity is something that you don't necessarily get paid well for or anything like that. But has there ever been anyone that said you couldn't do what you're doing, who cast doubt, oh, you can't be a magician, you should stay on the corporate track? And how did you turn that attitude on its head?
People really question it, but they didn't say you can't. They just said they didn't know how, and they were cautioning me in a different way. Fortunately, I had people who were a little bit more supportive than say you can't, because if you believe that you can't, you won't try. And if you won't try, you can't get it. Or if you don't think you can, you're not going to swing for the fences. So if you're trying to swing all the way for the fences, you got to use your entire effort. How do you use your entire effort if someone is devoting their time full time to something and you're doing a part time? That person, given all things equal, unless you're a genius, that person will have more time to iterate and more time to think about their craft than a part-timer. So there's this the words about burning the bridges behind you or burning the boats. When people would raid or try to conquer lands, the leaders would actually burn the boats so that they would have no place to come back. And to me, that process of leaving PayPal was burning a boat, because it was sink or ship. I'd have to sink or swim, but there's no coming back from that. I could be mediocre as a magician. I could fake this and say, hey, I'm the magician. Or like, you know, there's jobs that are so fun that anyone would do for a living. A couple of them are photography, DJ, and magic. You see so many of those guys out there. DJ, hey, buy the equipment. You do it for your nephew or niece, and you pull it out 2-3 times a year, and you're like, hey, I broke even. DJ. And then you have a printout of a business card. That's great. And if you want to do that, good for you. But that's not what I wanted to do. So
you gotta go
I sometimes
all in.
Coach people on how to market, how to walk away, and you have to have walk away power, and you have to be able to have a mindset that's drilled into you to know how to say no and know what clients to work for and go through these negotiation scenarios. So one thing that I've been telling people is, if you can keep them on the phone for 15 or 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you typically have sold them, because they're listening and hanging on your every beat. So one thing that I love to work with people is finding out what they typically say and then how to add more value.
Yeah.
In each conversation, one by listening and sometimes by adding on. I used to have this buffet attitude where I'm going to add balloons and juggling and magic, which is great. Sometimes people want buffets. But I akin that to what I like now, which is Michelin-rated restaurants and dining rooms, which is, it's a small portion, but you know it's done perfectly. And that's the type of crowd I'm catering to. The people who have money, who aren't going to complain that the portion sizes are really small, they're going to be the ones that say, this is perfect, and they're going to rave about it. And there are clients like that. But if you don't understand that business model, it doesn't work. And I have some clients. I actually had a client where I work with. One of the drills we did was understanding the service model, because he was doing the lower end events that I was doing at one time. And I was like, hey, our drill is, you know, we're going to go out to a restaurant and we're going to eat and we're going to see what's different about portions, because he was kind of like a buffet mentality. And I said, hey, if you transferred your mentality, there's people who are willing to spend money, but you have to frame it in a specific way so that what he was specifically doing was a bite-sized piece that was perfect. He had everything down 90%. And I felt that that last 10% would have made a 2 or 3x difference in his business, because he would have been doubling or tripling the business just because I knew I was there at that point in time. And a lot of people don't see that a 10% increment really does make a difference. Now, I want you to think about gold and silver. Gold is about maybe $1,600. Silver is, you know, less than $100, maybe $30. That's a difference between a celebrity like, you know, a basketball player or anything else on television, like A-list versus B-list. What they can offer to the A-list, they might have said, hey, we wanted $40 million. And then if they can't have him, maybe they'll lower it to 10 or 5. The problem is most people aren't willing to get to that extra step where they become an A-lister in their field.
The power of scale. Yes.
Well, imagine if the whole world was your marketplace and anyone could hire you. If you perfected what you did, there's like this verse, I think, in the Bible where it says something about if you've done things well, you'll be performing in front of kings and queens. I'm like, if I shot for that, even if I shoot for the stars, I'm going to get pretty close. And if you look at my client list, you'll see that Google has hired me 23 times virtually. 23 times. And I think I lost track of between the live times they've hired me. I believe that they've hired me over 60 plus times.
That's awesome. Yeah. Playing for kings and queens.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, we're almost out of time, so I'd just like to ask you one last question. It's been great talking to you. I'm writing notes quite furiously, actually. For someone who is thinking about pursuing their creative craft but is unsure, they have a safe job, but they want to make the leap, what would you say to them at this point?
Invest in yourself. Hire coaches who have done what you've wanted to do. Coaches who believe in you and inspire you. There's a lot of coaches who will blow smoke up your ass and say, hey, you can do this. I don't take anyone I don't think I can help. Then there's people who are very who are not selective, and they'll just be like, nah, I think you can do this, and they really don't believe it. Or there's certain people who are like, will pull you into debt to do something. You know, I feel like there are so many inspirational people that you can ask. Like, you might not want to ask someone in your field. You might want to ask someone who's in a similar field, because there's this primacy of being in a space. If you have market share, often someone who's a market leader might not want to share what they know because they might perceive you as a threat. So I've seen people try to learn from someone specific. I say, come learn from me and apply what you learned from magic or my marketing into your business, and I'll share with you, no holds barred. If you're coaching with someone who's in the same industry, do you think they're going to share with you everything they know? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. That's my opinion, but no. That's just a thought that's a little bit different. I've performed for Tim Ferriss, our author of Tools for Titans and 4-Hour Workweek, 4-Hour Chef. I performed for him 4 times. And he said, do things different, or for 24 hours, do something different than you would normally do. So, like, for example, when I go, I'm flying off to Chicago tomorrow, okay? And I'm going to be there for the next 4 or 5 days. But I would never tell someone, hey, I'm not available for your event. I would just say, hey, during this time, if you want me to come, I might be able to make it, but during this month, especially during these couple of days, it's going to cost you $100,000. I'm going to make a way to, if they say yes, I'm going to make a way. But if I'm the guy performing for billionaires, it's not a surprise that once in a while I'll quote that high. But pricing is based on demand, date, time, and location. Never talk pricing until you've asked for all the variables. I had a very famous presidential candidate once ask me to perform for them or perform for her. And the only thing that I asked for was a photo with her. She declined, so I declined her offer because I was willing to do it for free. And at this donor's, they were going to give, you know, a lot of the donors who were showing up were paying like $20,000 a seat to be there. And the only thing I asked was for a photo. And I would have never voted for her anyways. And I'm very apolitical. But you have to realize the name power of just being able to say you've performed for, you know, presidential candidates or, you know, other people. But it's really more important to find out context before quoting a price. And I think the sooner you get to price, the lower in value you have.
Ooh.
Your work should be priceless because your time is priceless. And if you don't feel that way, you should start thinking that way, or at least trying to ask, what would it take for it to be more? Would you, you know, on the last day or your last breath, the older and older I get, the more I realize I only have so much time. When I was younger, I have, you know, you feel like you're invincible. But when you get more tired and you're older, you're like, hey, do I need to do this next corporate event? Do I need to do this kids event? Definitely not. You know, you have a lot of walkaway power. But when you're young, hustle and learn as much as you can. But when you get older, find other mentors who excel, like myself or yourself. Find people who excel in their fields. And that's why the speaking business is so profitable. We might not be the next Jerry Rice, but if you look at any speaker bureau, I challenge you right now to go to any speaker bureau and look at top speakers. I'm never going to be a chef, but you can see chefs who are the world's best chefs do demos or talks. You can see athletes, especially anyone who's a top one percenter who has won the Olympics or won something in a sports field. They can just show up and have an appearance fee. Because they're best in class and they're not even doing anything related to high tech or business, yet they're getting an astronomical fee. And that's why I think everyone should pursue excellence. Because when you pursue excellence in one field, it's going to give you a platform in any other field as well. Look at Eileen Gu. She got 3 gold medals, I believe. And she's repping for things that aren't even sports related. Luxury products, because everyone aspires for perfection.
Damn, we'll leave it there.
That's a brand ambassador. That's what a brand ambassador is. And that is the power. And I think people think of it as a craft and people think of it as an art, but it's an intersection of art, craft, and business.
I've got to say that I really enjoyed my talk with Daniel Chan, hearing his story of going all in on magic and turning his art into a lucrative and enjoyable pursuit that always challenges him. As he said, the riches are in the niches. And when we focus on doing what we love in a way no one else can, success will come, especially when you work as hard and as fearlessly and as ambitiously as Daniel does. Thanks for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. And here's to going all in on your creative pursuits.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and learned at least one thing that will help you stay on the creative path.
If you liked it, please subscribe as there's plenty more to come. And we'd love it if you could leave us a review if you found the podcast worthwhile. And if you didn't, please send us your feedback. We're all ears. You can check us out online at redplatypuscreative.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at redplatypuscreative.
Remember, you are not alone in your creativity, and you can make money from your creative pursuits. See you next time when we speak to another creative mind that's committed to making their way work.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.